Before we start today's episode, Cheryl and I wanted to make sure you know that we are hosting a virtual Spring Equinox gathering for Meetup members of our Patreon. To find out more about how you can join, go to patreon.com/gatheringgold.
I think that we are wired to connect to symmetry, that we crave order not only to make sense of the disorder of this world, but because some part of us perhaps remembers and longs for a world both beyond and embedded into this world that is composed of symmetry. Welcome to Gathering Gold, a podcast for highly sensitive souls. I'm Cheryl Paul, a counselor trained in the Jungian depth psychological tradition.
And I'm Victoria Russell, Cheryl's niece and co-host. Cheryl, I can't believe it's this time already. I feel like we were just recording our winter solstice episode. But here we are, recording an episode about the spring equinox. Cheryl and I have been going back and forth in conversation about the spring equinox and what themes of this seasonal time are kind of rising to the surface for us. And Cheryl, you've been highlighting this idea of symmetry and balance. And you shared with me a beautiful quote from Madeleine L'Engle, the author of A Wrinkle in Time. And this quote comes from A Swiftly Tilting Planet. And the quote says that this time brings forth, quote, light and darkness dancing together, born together, born of each other, neither preceding, neither following, both fully being in joyful rhythm. Such a beautiful and apt quote for this time of the year, this equinox, and the ideas of balance and symmetry that we'll be exploring today. So with that, Cheryl, I would love to hear some of the thoughts that have been percolating for you about the spring equinox.
I thought we would start with just naming, what is it? What is the spring equinox? So equinox comes from the Latin meaning equality of day and night. It's a specific moment when the sun is directly above the equator. After that moment, we have more hours of light than darkness. So we've been increasing our hours of light since December 21st, the winter solstice. And after the spring equinox, we have more light than dark. So we have less light than dark from December 21st to March 21st. Then we have this moment of equal light and dark. And then from March 21st to June 21st, we have more minutes or hours of light than dark. And then we begin our descent after June 21st, when we start to lose minutes of light each day after the summer solstice. So we are now, or approaching, the ascent time of year. Now we are in the ascent time of year. From December 21st to June 21st, we are in ascent in terms of light. There's a burgeoning, an opening, a quickening that has been happening since winter solstice. And the invitation is to open to newness, to new births of all kinds. So perhaps that's a new project or a new internal belief pattern or starting a new class or a new habit, but it doesn't have to be a doing-based new birth. It can be an invitation to listen more deeply, to pause more often, to become aware of the birds singing as they awaken from winter's hibernation, and perhaps join them in their song. So I think one of the more general themes of spring is of rebirth and new birth. And the birds literally sing to this theme and this invitation on one level to find our own voice. I think we are almost always in a journey of reclaiming, claiming, deepening our own voice and asking, one of the questions we can ask during this time is, what does it mean to find more of our bird song in this time of ascent from solstice to equinox? To be like birds as we shake out our feathers, ruffle up our chests, and sing a song that perhaps we haven't sung in a while. So what does that mean both literally and metaphorically? To literally sing alongside the birds and also to become curious about what elements of our true voice have become quiet and are ready to be born or reborn. So that's one element, is the emergence, the ascent, the finding our voice, the bird song of spring in general. But then we move more specifically into equinox, right? And we recognize that this is a time of symmetry and balance in the celestial realm, in the realm of heavenly bodies, which invites us to become curious about our own places of symmetry and balance. This is particularly interesting to me because one of the underlying themes for people who struggle with anxiety and OCD is an acute intolerance for asymmetry. And by that I mean not necessarily literally in an artistic way or with furniture or something like that, but for the discomfort of how asymmetrical we are as humans, that it's so rare for us to feel just right. And that's an OCD theme, the just right theme, which I've written about. We feel lonely or bored or sad or empty, and it doesn't feel quite right. And we might sense that there is some place in the world or in this universe where perfect symmetry exists, but we rarely live into that place. Right? So the spring equinox it's actually one moment, which I was delighted to read about. And this year it's at 11:06 a.m. on March 19th, Eastern Time. So it's that one moment when the sun is directly above the equator, and it's measured at a place called the first point of Aries. Right? So at 11:06 a.m. on March 19th, light and dark are in perfect balance, perfect equality. So then we can ask, what does this mean for us, right? So when we connect to the spiritual significance of balance and harmony, then we're in the realm of the interconnectedness of all things, the place where there is perfection, the place where everything is okay, where everything does feel just right because we are connected in this realm and in some realm beyond this realm. So I'm curious to hear what you think about all of that so far, Victoria.
Well, I think when we were talking recently about this topic and you mentioned like, oh, there's this one moment and, you know, this idea of like maybe in some way there is a perfect order or symmetry. And I said to you what you knew I was going to say, which was that brings me anxiety. Like there's one moment and I'm going to miss it. Mm-hmm. And then I struggle with the spiritual realm with a sense of trust that like in some way everything is okay. Mm. I wish I didn't. I have so much respect and like, oh, envious admiration for people who have that like deeper sense. But I will say that when I think about this moment of balance between light and dark and kind of reflecting on that, what does come to my mind is it's an interesting opportunity to also reflect on how we long for both. Like part of the tension of being human, which I think you kind of mentioned in the Trauma Collisions episode about relationship. There's the longing for separateness and the longing for intimacy. And as humans, I think we long for darkness in some ways. Yes. And we long for light. Yes. We long for the slow, restful, inward nature of winter. Mm. And we long, some part of us, at some time, longs for that. And another part of us might long for, like you said, the opening and the quickening and the blossoming of spring. And so I also see just this beautiful opportunity to acknowledge and honor both longings in ourselves, that both are necessary. And I'm by no means even remotely an expert on the concept of yin and yang. But when we think of that symbol of a circle and about half of it is dark and about half of it is light, but there's a circle of light in the dark and a circle of dark in the light. I think the equinox is like a beautiful time to honor that within ourselves, that we can long for both and that we can carry both in whatever season we're in.
Yes.
And I just the other night in one of my counseling classes, one of my professors shared that spring can actually be a very difficult time for people with depression. My professor was saying that sometimes what can be so hard about spring for people who are suffering with sadness, hopelessness, low energy, something really, really difficult, is that the world is opening up and it's like, oh, everyone else is happy and it's full of light and I don't have that in me right now. So I just want to honor that too, that we can all be having different experiences of these seasons. And it's not one or the other, it's both and.
It's really beautiful. And I think even when you don't struggle with depression on a regular basis, we can still feel sad that winter is ending.
Yeah.
And I love this question that you're asking. How can I bring winter into spring? This is what you're saying about the yin yang. What are the elements of winter that I carry throughout the year? And I'm very much feeling that. We are just about to tip into March as we are recording this. I have been feeling spring's whisperings throughout February as we are increasing light and having some warm days and seeing the bulbs starting to poke their little green heads out. And the creek water looks different and the light is different. And it's so magical and beautiful. And there is also this part of me that is like, wait, already? It's happening already? What about all the dark of winter and, you know, having that extra sort of cozy family time at night and having an excuse to just curl up in bed and not feeling like the pressure to, oh, now I got to go out and garden and do all the, you know, even though I love all that. But there is an implicit permission to be more restful in winter and more inward and go to sleep earlier. So I think it's really important to name that as we are approaching spring equinox and approaching the season of spring in general. And to hold that image of what elements of winter can we bring with us into spring. So this restlessness in spring, the fear of change, not liking change, especially HSPs, you know, sensitive people, just even if it's a positive change, we just don't like change. And so we welcome the freshness and the beauty of spring, but we also might resist it because it's just our nature to resist change. And so then I want to go underneath and tap into that spiritual realm, the place of no change, the place of symmetry. And I think it was in, I don't know, one of the articles we sent each other where it said physicists are particularly fascinated with symmetry in physics, to be symmetrical is to be immune to possible changes.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
That just kind of took my breath away, right? I know, in a way.
Yeah.
And there's the paradox again. We don't really want to never change. Right. Like, right. How awful would that be?
Right.
You know, we've been talking with Dave and Asher lately, the three of us, about some movies we've seen recently where people are stuck in time, basically, where they don't age. Age of Adeline and Groundhog Day. And kind of what a nightmare that is, right? And so how much we resist the passage of time and grieve it. And yet when you get this glimpse of a world where you don't age, it's like the saddest thing ever. It's so awful, right? And sad. So it's like one part of us longs in physics to be symmetrical, is to be immune to possible changes. Like, first of all, what does that even mean? I can't even really begin to fathom what that means from a scientific lens, but when I see it through a spiritual lens, it makes sense to me. So it's not, I don't want time to pass, even though part of me doesn't want time to pass. But it's how do we find the symmetry that is here every day and anchor into that as time is passing and flowing and changing, that we have these anchor points of symmetry. And that there are these elements of perfect symmetry that exist in nature: a snowflake, butterfly wings, honeycomb, sunflower, and spring equinox, right? Where it's these moments or these elements of perfect symmetry. And so we can imagine that this exists within us, right? Maybe not in a literal sense, and certainly not in the sense of purity and perfection. And we have a whole episode on that if you haven't listened, because we will always be messy and imperfect and asymmetrical in a certain way. And that's what makes us so beautifully human. But I'm pointing to a place that is unchanging within us, right? And I can only describe it as our soul or the spiritual part of us, that there is this blueprint that mirrors and matches some kind of symmetry that we see in the natural world. And then maybe beyond that in the universe, right? That we can't see in our everyday life, right? So to bring it back to the anxious brain or the OCD brain that is trying to find the formula that will make us immune to change, right? That is grasping at the compulsion, or the obsession, or the answer, the question that will stop time essentially and give us that certainty and prevent loss from happening. Of course, it doesn't exist, but that's where the misguided mind goes. But it's a longing that's pointing to a place inside of us that does exist, right? Our inner snowflakes or butterfly wings or equinox, right? Can we ask that question? Can we pose that as a question? Does that misguided longing point to an inner place where there is a sense of just rightness? And that can these reflections on symmetry and balance as we approach spring equinox bring us into closer contact with these enduring places that exist within and all around us and can serve as a balm for the anxious soul, right? That is misguided because we don't have the practices and the teachings that help us find actual certainty and symmetry. So this is a lot. It's kind of heady. I'm going to try to like bring it into more of the realm of image so that we can feel into this together. It's heady to me, but it's also, as everybody I think knows at this point who listens to our podcast, it's the realm that most excites me, lights me up, is the spiritual realm. And it's a great counterpoint to be in conversation with you, Victoria, because it's a realm that you and many people struggle with, right? So, so this question I'm asking, right, are these elements in nature both a place within us that is complete and symmetrical, right? Again, I think for the anxious OCD brain, so much of the attempt is to find completion, is to find certainty, but also pointing to a place bigger than us that is complete and symmetrical in the universe, right? As without, so within, we sometimes say in the Jungian world, so that what we see in the world mirrors what lives in us. So let's bring some examples. Right? The perfect symmetry of a halved strawberry lives somewhere inside of me. The haphazard tree limbs that I can see all outside my windows right now, leafless, are also expressed in me. So I have to assume that we have both within us, the symmetrical and the asymmetrical. If it exists in nature, it exists in me because I am nature, right? The perfection and the imperfection. And one must depend on the other, like the quote you read initially. They are not separate. So I am both tree and strawberry. I am both tomato bush all over the place with no symmetry, and sunflower, which is perfect symmetry. And there's something... So taking it then deeper back to the anxious brain, there's something in our anxious brain that longs for order. We call it a longing for certainty, but it's also a longing for predictability, right? And this need gets projected onto needing certainty in our relationship or in our health or in our finances. But if we go underneath, we can name it as a spiritual longing for order. And when we look to nature, we see these predictable patterns everywhere. We see the fractals in a sunflower, which is a repeated pattern, and there's a mathematical term for it. We see the rhythm of the year, where the seasons happen predictably every 4 months at 3 month intervals. That always happens in the same exact way since the beginning of time on this earth. If we look with different eyes, with spiritual eyes, we will find the order and predictability that we're seeking, that we tend to seek in the wrong places. So it's actually everywhere, but we have to look for it. So what does this mean? It means that we are not living in a meaningless, disordered universe. There is order everywhere. There is disorder too, of course, but there is also order. And I think that this is deep medicine for the anxious mind, right? Yes, we have to learn how to tolerate uncertainty because that's the world we live in. But for me, the more interesting and potent medicine is to seek the elements that offer true comfort. And even, dare I say, somewhat blasphemous in the mainstream OCD world, certainty.
Yes, Cheryl, I am this, I guess it's a little bit of our yin and yang, you could say.
Could say.
As you said, and as I said before, the spiritual realm can be tricky for me. I think it's why I have been drawn to the humanistic realm of psychology or tradition of psychology, and specifically some of the existential philosophers and psychologists. And as I've mentioned in previous episodes, one of the core components of existentialism is looking at meaning. And, you know, someone might feel that there is inherent meaning, and that's great, and they can draw from that. Or someone can say, It's my job to make meaning here on earth for myself. If I don't feel it just kind of coming from somewhere else. And I love the idea of nature being this beautiful inspiration mm-hmm. for making meaning and finding that kind of right relationship with order as best as we can. Mm-hmm. Like you said, with OCD, with anxiety, there's this desire to create and impose and find order in a very rigid way that can go over the top. So it goes from like, yeah, all humans need some order, to my attempt to impose order is actually making me suffer. Mm. Or my brain's attempt to create order is causing more suffering. Mm-hmm. But there is a relationship with order that we all need as humans yes. to feel healthy and to get through the day and be happy and relax.
Yes.
And so I love the idea of just kind of navigating our relationship with order and symmetry, not seeing it all as pathology, but like, of course we want order. And I'm just also thinking about how often you talk about ritual and how ritual is a kind of order and a kind of symmetry of that is often seasonal and cyclical and creating some containers for our experience of time and our human experience.
Yes. And that was just what I was about to say, is that for me, well, two things. One is seasonally, there is just this 1 minute where light and dark are in perfect balance. So we can feel anxious about that. Like, oh my gosh, I have to harness that 1 minute and I have to be fully present for that 1 minute. And what if I miss it? But also it's letting us know that the rest of the time we are in asymmetry. We are not in perfect balance of light and dark. It's just that one moment, that 1 minute, 1 second. I don't even know what it is. It's probably, you know, a second. And so for the majority of the time, we are asymmetrical, we are out of balance. And yes, we need the practices and the mindsets that help us tolerate that and find, you know, our equanimity within it, our still point, our inner place of anchoring within that. And for me, it is very much around ritual and spiritual practice, and that when I committed so deeply to my spiritual practice many years ago, that became the anchor point of my day. Within that, to also be flexible. If it doesn't happen every day, that's okay. If it happens at a different time of day, that's okay. My spiritual practice is never the same from one day to the next, ever. It's never exactly the same. It might follow a general structure or different things I like to do each morning or the mornings that I'm able to do it. But it's like, it is the yin and yang. It is the light and dark in not equal measure. It is finding the flexibility and fluidity within the structure, right? That everyone knows who has children, there's no possible way to have the routine every day.
Yeah.
And just when you think you have it, they drop a nap anyway, and they're going through a growth spurt or a developmental change, and everything is thrown into chaos and turmoil. But we do our best, right? We do our best to have predictable moments throughout a day, a week, a month, a year. And if those predictive, if it's a schedule, if it's a ritual, whatever it is, that is very soothing to human beings and necessary to human beings. So there's this realm of like the day to day and how we spend our hours of a day and our days of the week. And then, you know, there is this other realm, which to me more and more in my life doesn't feel like another realm. It just feels like it's all one realm, that when I look at the light on the trees in this very moment, It's light on trees and it's light on winter grass. And so it is sunlight that I'm looking at, but it's so infused with some other beauty that to me can only speak to something bigger than what I'm just looking at, right? That's how it feels inside of me. When I was taking notes for this episode, we had what we have in Colorado, these just sudden snowfalls. And it was totally unexpected. It was like 50 degrees the day before, and then we wake up and all of a sudden we're in this massive snowstorm. So this is what I wrote. I'm watching a snowfall, aware that the fractal, symmetrical universe is descending all around me. And it was this experience of, this is magic. Like, this is, I'm living in a snow globe. Like, this is magic. How is this even possible that hundreds of thousands of snowflakes, each one perfect and symmetrical and magical, are falling from the sky all around me? And I think this is where the pause and being in a sense of awe, to me, that's so much of what I mean by being in a spiritual mindset or in the spiritual realm, is like, wow, I am standing in a fractal, symmetrical universe at this moment, snowflakes falling all around me. A few snowflakes float to the window as if saying hello, and I say hello back. I reach my hands out to make contact. And this to me, again, is spiritual relationship, right? That's all relationship. I'm having a relationship. To me, it's all alive, right? The snowflakes, like, they're coming to the window. They didn't have to. You know, obviously the wind is blowing them, but they, you know, in my mind, and it's like a child mind, right? It's a mind of wonder and awe of those snowflakes. They came to say hello to me. Like, they did. And I said hello back. And now we are making contact. And later, I step outside, I hear birds singing. And so the paradox of spring's rebirth intersecting with winter's farewell, right? How could we have snow? And then this is just one of the magical things about Colorado, that we have snow in the morning and then the sun comes out and the birds are singing, right? So this time is an invitation into paradox, which always lives more clearly at the points of intersection when there is balance and symmetry, right? So we hold both, again, the literal light and dark in equal measure, or somewhat moving towards equal. And then we're invited to hold those inner places as well.
That's really beautiful, Cheryl. I love the image of the snowflakes coming to say hi to you. And you highlighted for me a quote from an article that I shared with you. This article was from How Stuff Works. And the article was called, and we'll share it in the show notes, "Why Do We Get So Much Pleasure from Symmetry?" Mm-hmm. Which I think is just a great way of putting it too. Like, it's actually not just comforting, but pleasurable to experience symmetry. And so this quote comes actually from a book called The Accidental Universe, The World You Thought You Knew, by physicist Alan Lightman. There's light. And this is the quote. I would claim that symmetry represents order, and we crave order in this strange universe we find ourselves in. The search for symmetry and the emotional pleasure we derive when we find it must help us make sense of the world around us, just as we find satisfaction in the repetition of the seasons and the reliability of friendships. Mm. Symmetry is also economy. Symmetry is simplicity. Symmetry is elegance. Mm. What was it that made you highlight that quote, Cheryl?
I think that we are wired to connect symmetry, that we crave order not only to make sense of the disorder of this world, this universe, but because some part of us perhaps remembers and longs for a world both beyond and embedded into this world that is composed of symmetry. So I don't know, the quote really struck me. I actually put his book on hold at the library because I was so struck just from the title, The Accidental Universe.
Hmm.
The World You Thought You Knew, written by a physicist. And that he's speaking to this satisfaction that we get from repetition, but again, in a healthy way, because I think about the repetition of a compulsion, for example, or a rumination, that is an unhealthy repetition. And I am very interested, as I think you are too, Victoria, instead of just trying to get rid of things, is replacing the unhealthy with something healthy, right? We know we can't really just stop ruminating, just, you know, I mean, sometimes we can, but that the ruminating and the stuck on spin cycle is perhaps, again, speaking to a need for repetition. And if we can direct that into the healthy ways that repetition shows up, the healthy ways that reliability shows up. I love that he says, and the reliability of friendships.
Yeah.
Like, yes, and we know that sometimes relationships are not always reliable, but if we're lucky, we have those relationships in our life and those friendships that are reliable, that we can actually rely on, sink into, that there's some kind of certainty, stability, order, you know, order, or I don't know, repetition that comes from that, you know. It's like when I think about one of my best friends, Jessica, who has been in my life since we were 11, and we don't talk every day because that's just not possible, but it kind of feels like we do talk every day. We certainly have contact of some kind every day for 40 years, over 40 years at this point. You know, is that symmetry? I don't know. I mean, she certainly feels like some kind of counterpart to me, right? In some way. Is it reliability? Yes. A place where I can rely. Yes. And a much better place to rely on than getting caught in a worry storm in my mind. Right? Trying to control things that I have absolutely no control over.
Yeah. Well, if there's one thing we can rely on with me, it's that I will be drawn to the quote that starts with, but on the other hand.
Perfect. So
my
perfect
mind,
symmetry.
My mind went to this quote from the article that said, but on the other hand, too much symmetry can be a tad boring.
Yes.
While perfectly symmetrical designs are more pleasing to the brain, they're not necessarily more beautiful. Both art novices and experts prefer art that strikes an optimal level of stimulation, not too complex, not too simple, not too chaotic, and not too orderly.
Mm.
And I thought about how I think one of the things that frustrates me about myself is that I'm not too orderly. And one of the things I like about myself is that I'm not too orderly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's this interesting relationship that I have with balance and symmetry and order. But I also was just thinking about arranging flowers, something that I've talked about before that I find to be creative and relaxing and meditative, and how I'm actually really drawn to creating arrangements that are not symmetrical. So they're not like a perfect dome of roses or something. Mm-hmm. Anyone who wants, you can Google asymmetrical flower arrangement and you'll go, oh, okay. And, you know, it might be like a beautiful kind of V-shaped or U-shaped bouquet where the flowers are, one of them is kind of drifting upwards towards the sky. And on the other side, maybe it's kind of spilling out of the container towards the ground. And there's something to me that's kind of beautifully wild about that, that also feels there's the beautiful symmetry of the petals themselves. And then what also feels like another part of nature, which is that you go into the woods and it's just ragged and wild when things are really growing everywhere. Yes. And so it's that both and there's beauty in all of it. Mm.
And I think that's so much of what spring equinox, both the equinoxes are, is the both and, right? So we can talk about it in terms of perfect balance and symmetry, but the truth is it's just that one moment in time. Everything leading up to it is asymmetrical. Everything after it is asymmetrical. Mm. So how can we both be curious about where there is healthy symmetry in our lives internally and around us and spiritually? What does that mean to us to have healthy symmetry and order, and continually making room for and being flexible with the inevitable and I think more predominant asymmetry that lives inside and outside and everywhere?
Well, thank you, Cheryl. This has been so juicy. And I know, like you said, it's a little bit hard to pin down
yes.
as a subject, but I've found it really fun. And I hope everyone listening has too.
Yes, me as well. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you. Thank you to Jarrett Farkas for the use of our beautiful new theme music. If you enjoy the show, please subscribe or follow, leave us a review, share it with a friend, and consider joining our Patreon, where we share regular bonus content and also host virtual meetups. Visit patreon.com/gatheringgold to learn more.